This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. It's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to orderzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at orderzona.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and our guest is Jeremy Appleton. And we're talking supplement quality, how to make sure that the supplements you choose are of decent quality. What are the criteria? I think it is a little bit challenging for consumers out there, but it is, I think, with virtually everything, you know, with cars, with legal services, you know, with how many bad legal experiences have people had, with medicine, with health practitioners as well. You know, notwithstanding the fact that there are regulations, there are, you know, caveat emptor, buyer beware. So with that in mind, Jeremy, on a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 representing, quote, very poor quality, I know this is a hypothetical, and 10 indicating optimal quality, how would you rate the overall quality of nutraceuticals, botanicals, and natural products available in the health professionals channel?
That's a challenging question. People often assume that supplements that are manufactured for the professional channel are of superior quality, and many manufacturers actually give a lot of lip service to that, to various talking points about quality. Our quality is this, it's great. The reality is that the practitioner channel is much smaller than the retail channel. So unless a practitioner brand is owned by a larger parent company, we're often talking about much smaller operations with limited staff to control quality. So there are a few players in the practitioner channel who are actually manufacturing their own products, but they have them contract manufactured. Now, they are often not likely to disclose that fact, and I will also say that using a contract manufacturing organization, or CMO, as
it's
we call them.
It's not per se bad, right? Yeah.
It's not a bad thing. There's some very high quality operations out there. Mm-hmm. The one thing that I have found working as a quality assurance executive is that if you depend upon a CMO to manufacture your product, it does mean that at some level you're relinquishing a degree of control over sourcing ingredients, over qualifying the raw material vendors, having visibility to the master manufacturing records, and so some degree of quality control is lost. You have to put your trust into that other organization. In the practitioner channel, we have companies that are really across the spectrum of quality, but from what I have seen, I would say the overall quality of that channel is a little bit better than average for the supplement industry, 6 or 7, probably, on a scale of 1 to 10.
But using the same scale, how would you rate the quality of products available in consumer-focused retail channels? Say, going to, Walmart, Costco, Whole Foods, etc., places like
right.
that.
Well, so the larger companies that tend to whose products tend to populate the shelves of these big box stores, on the one hand, they'll have more resources, so it's not unheard of for them to have a very robust quality, maybe even in-house laboratory testing capabilities. On the other hand, they may not be focused on the same kinds of questions that someone like Claire Farr, who we discussed in the first half of the program, would be in terms of freedom from potentially problematic additives and so forth. So the product,
they don't have that intervening layer of quality control, which is the practitioners themselves, who are pretty savvy and trained, and they may say, "Well,
exactly.
Wait a minute, the potency of this isn't right because you've just paid lip service to this ingredient, you've included it. Consumers may be deceived into believing that there's this is the correct dosage to achieve a certain goal, but it's just thrown in there for window dressing."
Exactly. And so the products that appear in the mass market they might be very consistent, but they might also be very consistently ineffective because they don't put enough of the actives in there. Now, that's not always the case. And again, it really comes down to the company itself. But sure, you know, there are companies that are selling in that space that are top-notch quality, and then there are others where you're just throwing your money away to be buying the product off the shelf. And that's why the practitioner channel is a really interesting model, because the practitioner gives guidance to the end user, expert guidance. They understand who are the quality companies, who are the fly-by-night operators. You know, what should they be looking for? And some of them will even go to the extent of visiting the companies and observing their manufacturing in person. We host some of our practitioners for educational sessions at our facility in Reno. It's close to Lake Tahoe, makes a nice little trip. Yeah. And we really enjoy doing that because we're very proud of our facility. We have a, you know, state-of-the-art manufacturing. We have a giant refrigerated space for those products that require it, such as probiotics, and it's really top notch. So those companies that invest in that, they're proud to show it off.
And I consider that a standing invitation to head out to Lake Tahoe area to see your facility.
Because
I've looked at some of the other companies, and you know, I have to say I was very impressed because the equipment is phenomenal. I mean, it's just the cleanliness. You know, you go into, and presumably your facilities like this, you go into a sterile room. They make you put little booties on and a you know, like a robe and a mask and a, you know, a head a hair net, you know, so that God
That's
forbid,
exactly right.
You know, nothing, not a single hair can fall onto the, you know, the cutting room floor there where they're mixing and blending supplements. It's pretty amazing.
That's right. There are multiple layers of protection. It starts with that gowning procedure, but even within the facility itself, you'll have, for example, the rooms where the supplements are encapsulated will have positive pressure that, you know, forces contaminants to go or to, you know, adulterants potentially to go out of the room versus something that could come into the room.
It's like an
airlock. Things like that are built in.
Yeah, I've seen that. Like, yeah, it's interesting. What are some of the big challenges that impede the potential improvement of supplement quality?
Well, you know, it's always in any business, right? Quality is one of those things that you have to pay for. So to build quality in, you're increasing your cost of goods inevitably. Mm-hmm. So either to invest in the overhead for the infrastructure or for the personnel to run the program or for just sourcing the highest quality raw materials, quality costs money.
And the so testing is expensive too. And, you know, their temptation
absolutely.
Is to say, oh, you know, we've already tested this material a couple of times. Enough is enough. And, you know, and I've had that same challenge at the time when I was manufacturing my own supplements, is that it's really expensive to, you know, to go to a manufacturer. But I have to say that one time I was making a green tea thing, and the vendor told me this is great material. This is first-rate material. No, I'm sorry. It was olive leaf extract. They said it was fantastic material. It's like whatever, you know, highest concentration available. And I sent it out for an assay, and it came back negligible content of the active ingredients, oleoropein, hydroxytyrosol, you know, the things that should show up in a quality. So it said, I'm sorry, but, you know, I did my due diligence. I can't buy from you.
That's right. And interestingly, the variance that you see from supplement to company to supplement company is reflected in variance that you would see from raw material provider to other raw material provider, and even from one analytical laboratory to another analytical laboratory. Mm-hmm. So is the laboratory using the right testing method, for example? Have they validated that method? There are, just as there are good manufacturing practices, there are also good laboratory practices and good agricultural practices. And so the companies that really care about quality will audit all of their vendors. That's actually required in good manufacturing practices. They will physically go to the vendors, and they will audit their facilities, and they will presumably know how to do that. Mm-hmm. This becomes very difficult when your vendors are in another country. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's been a recently introduced foreign materials supplier verification program. And I think I added a word in there, but FSVP, Foreign Supplier Verification Program. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that is to ensure that companies can't just be buying whatever raw material from India or China or wherever without having some information about the company that's supplying it.
Is that a problem that, you know, frankly, on the marketplace are many herbs that are grown in these countries that maybe where standards are less stringent? And of course, China has a terrible reputation for adulteration. They've, you know, killed off countless members of their own populace with tainted products. So what are the safeguards against that? How, you know, when people hear that, you know, material is imported from China, is that already a red flag?
It used to be more than it is now. China has actually come a long way in terms of increasing quality and being more concerned about contaminants than it once was. So it's a bit of an oversimplification to say, oh, it's coming from China, it's bad. Honestly, if a company has really good quality control measures in place, the country of origin probably doesn't matter as much. There are good and bad raw material suppliers available, you know, in most countries, even in within the U.S. So just because an ingredient comes from China doesn't necessarily mean it's bad, but it does present additional challenges in terms of performing an audit. If there's a language difference, you want to be able to you want to have traceability. You want to have rigorous vendor and raw material qualification. So we hold all of our raw material vendors to the same standards of quality, wherever, despite where they may be located. Mm-hmm. And if they can meet those standards, that's the most important thing. So, however, I'll say all of that, and I'll say, here's the big however. I've seen many companies degrade the quality of their products by choosing to buy cheaper raw materials from China or India. Mm. These companies usually end up paying the price later on for those decisions in ways that they can't foresee. Like they're having their raw materials will then fail the quality control testing that mm-hmm. they send it to the analytical laboratory, like you did with the for hydroxytyrosol in the olive leaf extract. At some point along the line, if they're testing for identity, purity, or potency, or freedom from contamination, then they're going to run into a problem. And then what recourse do they have with a foreign supplier versus with a U.S. supplier? If they could make a site visit, it would be very different. It would have more of an effect. So there is an inherent risk in going with a supplier from China or India, but a lot of that business has moved over there. China absolutely controls the raw material supply for dietary supplements, and they have for many years. Mm-hmm. But the quality of
like with
ingredients,
everything,
I mean,
they just can price us out of the marketplace. You know, just by virtue of the cost of labor and the scale of production over there, it's just, you know,
right. And even many American companies have outsourced their parts of their business to China or to India, where they can, because they want to stay competitive. They have to stay competitive, and yet they also recognize that a lot of people in this industry are concerned with quality, and so they can say, yes, we may be located in China, but look, mm-hmm. here are the quality standards that we are supplying. Here is full traceability right down to the plot of land that this herb was grown on, and they can in that way alleviate some of the concerns that people have about ingredients coming from China, particularly what they're, you know, most notorious for, which is adulterated products, mm-hmm. products that contain undisclosed drugs or you know, they've substituted some botanical for something similar.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like a filler kind of thing that with a similar. I mean, there's a lot of ways to create deception. Okay, folks, usually at this point, we allow one of our sponsors to share an important message with you. So here goes.
Do you want to manage your blood pressure without medication?
I have some exciting news about an effective non-drug treatment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, here to tell you about the Zona Plus. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally. It's so effective, it works for 9 in 10 people. Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. At least 22 clinical studies confirm regular use can result in an average decrease in blood pressure of 10% or more in just 4 to 8 weeks. To find out more, go to orderzona.com or call toll-free 1-888-408-6141. That's 1-888-408-6141 or orderzona.com. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, the company's offering you $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout. It's been a long time since I've been this excited about a new natural medical innovation, the Zona Plus, at orderzona.com. Thanks for listening, and thanks so much for supporting our sponsors. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a continuing free resource to you. And now back to Jeremy Appleton, our guest today. Can you take us through the process with an example, let's say EGCG from green tea? You know, what's the process like as Claire sources, checks for quality, puts it in a capsule, makes sure that it's, you know, I mean, there are probably many steps involved.
Oh, sure. Yeah, there are many steps in the process. So let's assume that we were going to qualify a new raw material, something we had not used before. So the first step is kind of a business development step where somebody on my end, the front end of product development, is meeting personally with the raw material suppliers, and we're talking about what they have. And we're asking questions. There's a verbal interview that happens. And then we say, okay, we're interested. Here's what we need to see from you. And we will have, all of the specifications, certificates of analysis on the raw materials, allergen statements, halal statements, kosher statements, when I say an allergen statement, I mean, does it contain soy, dairy, tree nuts, crustaceans, the 8 what are known as FALCPA allergens, are they any of those present? And in addition, with the Claire customer, there are also other ingredients that they don't necessarily want to have in there. So we'll look for those as well. And we have
that's a little above and beyond the usual standard, right? That's something unique.
We do. I mean, but that's because of who our customers are. We have to go above and beyond in terms of clean label formulations. And we do a full vendor qualification process and a raw material qualification process. And then the material will get a sample. And the sample of the material will come in-house. And, of course, it's in quarantine at that point. And then we will our quality control department will send a sample out to analytical laboratory that will test it both for freedom from contamination, right? Heavy metals, there are typical heavy metal tests that are done. Freedom from contamination by bacteria, say for example E. coli or Salmonella, and those fungal contamination, and then the identity of the active constituent. So if it's a botanical, there would be, say, for example, a thin layer chromatography or some other laboratory test to take its fingerprint, if you will, and to and then there will be a specific analytical method that would be used to determine if it has in it what it says it has in it in terms of active constituents.
I mean, apropos of after that, we talked about a sting operation that was initiated by the then Attorney General of the state of New York, now deposed and basically in ignominy because of some indiscretions that he committed. That was Attorney General Schneiderman, who was an implacable foe of the supplement industry, sought to demonstrate that supplements were adulterated, applied a technique that was perhaps a little iffy, right?
Had sort of a political axe to grind with the supplement industry and, you know, made a demand on the industry to use a certain type of DNA testing, fingerprinting for certain botanicals, but unfortunately it wasn't the right test because it would only work for a whole plant, but a lot of the supplements that are derived from botanicals are actually extracts, standardized extracts, and they don't have the same fingerprint as the whole plant. Certain constituents have been concentrated, and so that testing isn't necessarily the appropriate testing for every product, and it certainly wouldn't be useful for non-botanical products. So it was a bit of ignorance that was applied there, but despite the testimony of many experts, I know that the American Botanical Council and the American Herbal Products Association both weighed in on this. United Natural Products Association.
Yeah, I had Mark Blumenthal do some damage control on that from ABC, American Botanical Council, and
that's right.
He really deplored that whole episode.
It was really unfortunate, and yet that's sometimes we have to operate within the political sphere as well. I mean, just the existence of the Dietary Supplement Health and Education Act of 1994, which guides all of dietary supplements, that too was a gigantic political firestorm. You may remember the television spots with Mel Gibson. You know, they're breaking down the door to come. It's just vitamins. You know,
I was part of the effort to fund that.
You
know, to take us back historically, that was in the 90s. So, you know, a couple more questions. Stearic acid is something that has been vilified as an additive, as an ingredient in supplements. What's Claire's position on stearic acid?
Oh, boy, that's a...
It's a firestorm, I know, yeah.
That's a controversial one. You know, our customers have really not wanted to have magnesium stearate in the products. And it's always been curious to me why that was, because from my understanding of chemistry and so forth, I didn't really understand what the objection was. And when I really traced it back to its origins, what I found out was there was a particular supplement company that was making claims that magnesium stearate somehow coated nutrients and prevented their absorption in some way. And then they would take some supplements that had magnesium stearate and they'd put them in a water, and they'd stir it up and they'd say, "Hey, look at all this stuff that floats to the top," and and it was very unscientific, and it was very unfortunate too, because stearic acid, first of all, it's naturally occurring in food. Magnesium stearate, non-toxic, generally recognized as safe by the Food and Drug Administration, permitted as a safe food additive not only in the U.S. but in Canada and the U.K. all over Europe. It's in the United States Pharmacopeia. There's really no evidence to suggest that it causes any adverse effects when it's used at the levels. In fact, the reason why it's used in a manufacturing environment is it's primarily as a lubricant, but different materials
process, so that there's a
flow. And the encapsulation, some things are sticky and some things flow easily, and if you mix a little bit of magnesium stearate in, what you get is, on the other end, is a more uniform formula. If you have stuff that's sticking and not mixing well with the other ingredients, then think about how that translates into individual capsules. You might have individual capsules that are subpotent or overpotent, and you don't want that. So magnesium stearate is what we call an excipient. It's a lubricant, it's a release agent, but it can be a binder, a thickener. It's used in foods. People are consuming it, by the way. Even people who think they aren't. It's quite it's quite prevalent in food, and it naturally stearic acid, you'll find it in salmon, olive oil, beef, eggs, it's all over the place.
You've just beautifully elucidated my position in a more, I think, comprehensive way. I personally think it's safe, and I think that to gain a competitive edge, you know, it's cutthroat competition out there, is some supplement companies are using that magnesium stearate-free moniker as a way of gaining competitive edge on other supplement companies. And I just don't think it makes sense.
It doesn't. I mean, our focus at Clara has always been on simplicity and this unwavering commitment, as we've talked about, to hypoallergenicity, product purity, and rigorous quality control, right? And at the core of that, we are dedicated to having science behind it, scientifically validated supplements. So just because we may have some customers who say, I don't want that in my product, we try to educate them. It's like, well, yep. what's the real objection here? Mm-hmm. And help them to understand where the facts and the fiction, fall out in the whole magnesium stearate story. Some companies will say, oh, well, can't you just use ascorbyl palmitate or something like that? Mm-hmm. In some cases, you can. It's much more expensive. But there's really nothing that works as well.
Yeah. Another claim that it's actually difficult to meet the criteria for is GMO-free, because there are actually products that are derived from soy. And what I endeavor to tell people is that, they may be derived from soy, but they have an infinitesimal amount of soy protein or soy residue that, the derivation is from soy, or in the case of vitamin C, the derivation may be from corn, but it's not like you're going to go into anaphylaxis because of the corn residues or suffer the consequences of GMO. But it is a claim that's bandied about. What's your position on that?
If you knew how many times I had to answer questions about soy objections or corn objections, and people really don't think about amounts. When you talk about soy, for example, and the potential to cause an allergy, most allergists will tell you, there's a certain amount that you can, or corn in particular, there's quite a bit of corn that one can tolerate before one ever experiences any kind of allergy. And the presence of any amount of corn has to be, or rather soy, has to be disclosed on the label. Mm-hmm. Even if there's one exception, and that is if it's highly purified soybean oil, mm-hmm. which is a source of vitamin E most of the vitamin E that's out there in supplements, that does not have to be disclosed. And the reason it doesn't is because the FDA has determined that there's zero potential for allergenicity. Allergens mm-hmm. are proteins. That's the protein part of the mm-hmm. soy that's causing an allergic response, mm-hmm. not the fat part. But when you just have a highly purified oil, there's nothing left in there to be a problem.
Exactly.
So I think that people really need to look critically. Just because they see an ingredient appearing on the label, they have to wonder, first of all, well, how much of it? They might be consuming far more of that ingredient in their diet mm-hmm. than would ever be in minuscule quantities in a dietary supplement.
And GMO, what about that claim? Do you source from non-GMO sources whenever possible?
Sure, whenever possible. But look, some raw materials in the supplement industry are dependent on other raw materials further back in their chain. I'll give you an example. Mm-hmm. Probiotics, mm-hmm. right? These are live bacteria, mm-hmm. and they are fermented. Yep. And the fermentation medium is usually some sort of sugar, like dextrose. Mm-hmm. So this sugar, this dextrose sugar, in many cases in the industry is derived from corn or mm-hmm. maltodextrin, mm-hmm. from corn. That's just because that's the crop that we grow. Mm-hmm. I have no ability to tell the 12, probiotic fermenters in the world, or maybe there's 20, there's not that many, mm-hmm. to say, well, you have to source your dextrose from something that's mm-hmm. not corn because our mm-hmm. customers don't want corn anywhere in the manufacturing chain. Right. The truth of the matter is it's a little bit of sugar. It's a little bit of corn sugar. It's in the fermentation medium. And then those bacteria are right. purified away from that medium.
So there's no a lot. And then
you mentioned the other buzzword, corn sugar, left in it.
The question is, is that sugar in the probiotic? And the answer is it's probably
not,
because it's been
extracted. A few parts per billion, right, maybe.
Right.
You know, the amount is so minuscule as to be meaningless. Mm-hmm. But people don't ask that question mm-hmm. in terms of, well, how much is in there?
And the other one is fructose, and I don't know if any of your products contain fructose, but sometimes we use, B12 lozenges or DGL
right.
lozenges, and you know they may be sweetened with a little bit of stevia. But maybe a smidge of fructose, sort of to take off the bitterness edge of the stevia rabatia or whatever, roboticide. And people freak out because of the presence of fructose. And, you know, my reply right. to that is that, you know, when you drink a can of soda, you're getting a massive infusion of fructose. But if you have,
absolutely.
You know, a lozenge, it's probably
or
less
juice.
Than, yeah, or juice. It's probably less than maybe, a tiny bite of apple, you know, if that.
I would really encourage people, if they have an objection to certain ingredients, to ask themselves the question, at what dose do I have an objection? Mm-hmm. Like, how much before I have an objection? Because if you have an objection at one part per million, you got to ask yourself, how is that a scientifically valid position?
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you are severely allergic, in which case, mm-hmm. any amount is a problem to a Falkba allergen, you know, like that.
Yeah.
But if it's not a straight-up IgE, you know, mediated type of allergy.
Anaphylactic reaction, yeah.
Anaphylactic kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Why are you having an objection over, what might be just micrograms of a substance that have absolutely no biological meaning for you at all?
Jeremy, I wish we could go on and on because this is a subject that I think is of great importance, but we need to conclude. Are there any other points that you want to bring to the fore before we go? And can people find out more about Claire and Claren's commitment to quality?
Absolutely. People can go to visit Claire.com. That's Claire.com and learn about the company and its history and our quality practices and our products. I think that when people are looking at dietary supplements, they should seek the advice of a healthcare practitioner who they trust to determine which are the best brands, and they should read critically, not accept everything that they see either on the label or on the shelves. Just start to go to the next level of questioning and ask yourself, are these claims reasonable? If a dietary supplement company is making disease claims, those should be a red flag because they're not allowed to do that. And if they're doing it anyway, that might tell you something about the company. Go by the advice of a well-qualified and experienced physician or other qualified healthcare practitioner if you're trying to sort out which are the quality brands.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what we do. And in a way, I liken my position to that of a stockbroker or a financial advisor because I, for one, am a dunce when it comes to investments. So, I trust a financial advisor who has a great reputation. And, they're not always right, but, it's a inexact science. And that's what they do. That's their level. That's their area of expertise. And I think if you want to put together a good health portfolio, you should see a qualified, nutritionally oriented practitioner to give you the best advice possible. I want to add also that I've included two products from Claire among our recommended protocols in our brain health protocol. Recently, we've put Neurothera, which is a fantastic combination product. It's got a lot of the plausible nutraceuticals and ingredients that support brain health. And then, of course, there's in our bone health protocol, there's Osteothera, which is a great combination. Osteothera with Ipraflavone, which I think is a great ingredient for supporting bone health. So great company. Keep up the great work.
Thank you.
And thanks for joining us. That's Jeremy Appleton, Vice President of Science and Education for Claire Labs. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Many of us wonder sometimes what's going on with our brains, like when we can't recall a name that should be totally familiar to us or forget why we went into the kitchen. These worries take on a little more weight as we grow older. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Brain Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to slow cognitive decline and enhance memory and mental performance. just go to drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the Brain Health Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for my supplement starter kit, Heart Health Protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.